May it please the court and counsel, I'm John R. Olson, 9475. I represent the appellant here today in a case that I believe will call upon the court to interpret an arbitration provision in a contract. This is a situation where an employee, quite a valued employee, was sent off to China to open up an operation there for the company. And the company did a pretty good job of enticing him with guarantees and promises as to what he would be paid, what he would do there, all kinds of provisions relating to relocation costs, and so forth. And of course, a primary concern of any such employee would be, well, what happens to me when I return? Do I still have a job at the company? And so to resolve those concerns, there are several provisions in the contract which discuss or set forth how it will be determined what's going to happen to him when he returns. He went through the steps of relocating, opened up the operation, and then for reasons that I guess we've never been clear on, the company decided to stop the operation and returned him home early before the end of the two-year period. That action by the company falls squarely within his demand for arbitration, and of course squarely within the two-year contract that they call the secondment. Furthermore, before he was to be returned pursuant to this contract, the company was, and he was, required to confer about what would be suitable, and I think the word is suitable for him, in his job capacity when he returned. It didn't say that it would confer about whether he'd be working for the company or not. It said confer about what would be suitable for him. The company did indeed attempt to confer with him, but it wasn't really a conference, it was a threat. We have this one temporary job for you, take it or leave it. Pursuant to his demand for arbitration, we believe that was a breach of this contract and the implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing.
Mr. Olson, let me ask, this conference that took place, was that while Mr. Trojan was still employed in China, or was it after his employment had ended?
The first one was while he was still overseas, but then after he said, I have no choice, I'll come back, and he took this temporary job. Well, I mean, he was to take this temporary job, and when he set foot on soil here, they changed the job again on him, and without really conferring with him at all and seeking his agreement to this new position, and that instantly made him vulnerable to layoff, and he was.
Let me ask you this. How is he protected from layoff in any job? I mean, he's an employee at will, presumably, absent the contracts. Admittedly, I gather, this position was deemed temporary and was eliminated. But that it wouldn't have prevented him from being one of the 17 people laid off, would it?
I have to agree with you that the company did, and it's expressly stated here, the company had the right to end this agreement earlier at its own discretion.
Now you're talking about the trip to China.
Yes, but I have to say, and I'll sound like I'm arguing both sides at this point, but he certainly was not an at-will employee because there's a contract governing all manner of his terms and conditions.
While he's in China.
While he's in China,
yes. There is a contract that governs his employment.
But it also governs what will happen to him upon his return. But to emphasize that I want to be fair about this, there is a provision in this contract that says this offer is subject to any terms and conditions of at-will employment.
Now, it's the China offer.
It's, yes.
Okay.
And if you read that sentence, and it's hard to say. Normally, when somebody is agreeing that I'm an at-will employee, that's what it says. This just says subject to any terms and conditions of at-will employment. So we would continue to argue that this agreement was very clearly not negated any at-will employment, despite that phraseology.
But when he came back, let's assume they offered him chief executive position in the company when he comes back. You're going to be our new CEO. And now you're our new CEO, and 3 months later, it wasn't very long.
Could they fire him?
They could fire
him. Yes, they could. But they would have had to confer with him before assigning him to that job as CEO.
Because of the China agreement? It's your position they have to confer because of the China agreement?
Not only do they have to confer, they have to confer before he returns from China, pursuant to the actual terms of this agreement.
I know, but once he returns and gets the job, CEO, being paid $2 million a year, bonuses, stock options, all the rest, they fire him in 3 months. They can do that.
They can do that subject to their standard separation package agreement, which is in this mentioned also, the separation payments they make to fired employees.
He doesn't participate in that now.
No.
So he's been damaged by at least that.
Yes, but I appreciate the court's perception and looking beyond the immediate impact of what happened to him while he was in China. But this case is actually about the arbitrability of this agreement and what it did to him.
Well, but the judge found that there's no agreement to arbitrate the new job.
Well, I'm not sure.
My question is sort of more directed to that. That is to say, once he's back here and employed, he's subject to being fired or laid off, regardless of his position in the company.
Well, if the trial court was referring to that chronologically ending event, we don't know that because the judge only wrote two sentences in the decision. But we would still submit that the earlier actions taken against him, as we've outlined, and as he demanded in arbitration, are covered by this agreement. And these things are so intertwined, let's presume the court is exactly right, that very last event is not subject to an arbitration provision. It's so closely intertwined as a matter of the factual content of this case with everything else that happened, that it should all go to arbitration. Otherwise, we're talking about an arbitration and a court lawsuit, and I don't think the presumption of arbitrability should receive a dent in its armor like that. And so with that, I don't have much more to say, and I'm standing available for any questions.
You had mine.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
May it please the court, my name is Sybil Kiskin and counsel. My name is Sybil Kiskin with Davis Graham and Stubbs, and I'm here representing the appellee Norgren Inc. And I'd like to jump to a few of the points that Mr. Trojan's counsel made. The very last point that Mr. Trojan's counsel made is that because all these claims are so intertwined, you can't have both an arbitration and a court proceeding, so they should all just go to arbitration. Well, that is exactly contrary to Colorado law. Colorado rejected the intertwining doctrine in 2007, and the court's job is to determine, as the district court judge here properly did, whether based on the facts and the demand for arbitration, those facts are subject to arbitration under the clause. And a court can determine that some claims are subject to arbitration and some claims are not subject to arbitration. So there's no legal basis for suggesting that if you have a mix, they should all go to arbitration. Here, of course, our position is that if you look at the demand for arbitration, even though Mr. Trojan tries to frame it using lots of different legal claims and allegations, he is ultimately challenging his termination of employment as the global category manager in 2007. And as your honors have highlighted, this position from which he was terminated was a position that he accepted pursuant to the 2007 letter, which offered him the position. And it is undisputed that there is no arbitration clause in the 2007 letter. And so any claims that pertain to his termination of employment as the global category manager are not subject to arbitration.
Ms. Kiskin, did he make any factual allegations to any conferences being held during his employment in China concerning him ending the China employment?
Well, that's an excellent question, Your Honor. And actually, as I heard Mr. Trojan's counsel admit, that there was a conference while he was in China. And I believe that the letter that he signed, the 2007 Global Category Manager letter, which is in the record, and I actually have copies should the panel need to see either the 2007 letter or the 2006 letter. But that letter was signed while he was in China. And then he returned to the United States. He began working in that position in June of 2007, and he was not laid off until August of 2007, 2 months later. So he was back at the time that he was laid off, working under the 2007 letter, which is why the 2006 letter, which offered him the temporary assignment to China, is of no legal effect. And the arbitration clause in the 2006 letter, similarly, is of no legal effect.
Does Norgren have letters of employment with all of its people, or did the letter of employment start with the trip to China to cover the problems, issues related to that move?
Your Honor, I believe there's no letter that's in the record, and so. There's no letter that's been tendered by either side with respect to his employment prior to his temporary assignment. So I don't know. Actually, the answer.
They seem to have a letter for the 2007 position.
Yes, and I don't know if there was a letter for the 2005. I don't believe there was because I'm not aware of such a letter, and I handled the response to the EEOC charge. And have been working on this matter for several years now, four to be exact. But I don't want to say that with 100% certainty and be wrong, Your Honor. But I don't believe that there is a letter. But with respect to the 2006 letter, and as Your Honors know, when you interpret a arbitration provision in a contract, you have to look at the whole document in context, and you also have to attempt to discern the party's intent based on reading the whole document in context. And the 2006 letter starts off, one of Mr. Trojan's arguments in his brief is that the arbitration provision governs the arbitration of his return back to the U.S. and the position that he's given and sort of everything that happens after that gets him back to the U.S. and that happens when he's in the U.S. But that is not what the language of the arbitration provision says. And indeed, on the very first page of the 2006 letter, which is found beginning at page 26 on the computer record, it says, during your secondment, which is a temporary assignment, you will remain an employee of Norgren, retaining normal benefits, terms, and conditions of your current position for the duration of the secondment and upon return to the U.S. So there is a reference that upon the return to the U.S., he will be subject to the terms and conditions of his employment. He'll have long-term disability, things like that. Your title will be evaluated upon your return to the U.S. And then it says the terms and conditions of this appointment will be as follows. So after the prefatory language about when you come back, you'll be a normal Norgren employee again. But here now, from this point forward, in the middle of page one on, are the terms and conditions that will cover your secondment to, actually, and he was assigned to work not for Norgren Inc. when he was in China, but he accepted a position under the employ of Norgren Pneumatic Shanghai Company Limited, which is a different entity, and that's reflected on page 32 of the record. So then the rest of this letter contains all the different details of the secondment. And
that's a new term.
And I, secondment, according to Webster's third, I think it's the third edition of the Webster's Dictionary, is it's a temporary, and I have copies of this for the court and counsel if you're interested, the detachment of a person from his regular organization for temporary assignment elsewhere. So this letter governs his temporary assignment to China for a period of 2 years, unless it's determined by the company to make it a shorter period. On page 6 of the agreement, where the actual arbitration provision is, and it's page 31 of the record, it says any dispute, controversy, or claim rising under and or in connection with the arrangement will be settled exclusively by binding arbitration. Well, it doesn't say in connection with your employment with Norgren Inc. It says with respect to the arrangement. The arrangement being the details of the temporary assignment to China. And the letter sets forth all those details, that he gets a certain housing allowance, that he gets tax equalization, that he gets a car. So if, while he's in China, he has an issue with respect to these things, because he obviously doesn't have access to the U.S. courts, or be very difficult to have access to the U.S. courts while he's in China, the arbitration clause is included so as to give him a mechanism for resolving disputes with respect to his temporary assignment to Norgren Pneumatic Shanghai.
Ms. Kiskin, let me just ask you, because you said this this arbitration clause says any dispute, controversy, or claim rising under or in connection with the arrangement. And what you're saying is what the arrangement is, the details of being in China. Where is arrangement defined in the record so we can see which details it's referring to?
Well, the term arrangement is not defined in the 2006 letter. It is used beginning on that sixth page where there's a reference to the arrangement beginning on page 31 of the record under the modification section. It says both parties agree that this document represents the whole arrangement between the parties, and then jumping down to the arbitration provision, it talks about arrangement. So in order to determine what is meant by arrangement, you have to read the whole document as a whole. And I would submit to you that the arrangement refers to the temporary assignment.
It also relates to a transition back, because there's language in there about the transition back that there'll be. And to the extent that that's been breached, it seems to me there are two questions. Three questions. Is that a performance? Second is it subject to arbitration? And the third is, what is his remedy? I mean, if he goes to arbitration, what can the arbitrator do for him?
And I think those are all excellent questions, and if I can take them in turn. First of all, I think that Mr. Trojan in his brief overstates what the duty of the company is with respect to his return. Because on page 1 of the document, it says the duration of your secondment will be for a period of up to 2 years, which may be varied subject to mutual agreement. Okay, so that would suggest there has to be mutual agreement to vary it. However, the next sentence says the secondment may end earlier at the company's discretion. So since you have to make sense of the entirety of the agreement and read those two sentences together, I would submit to you that the first sentence means it'll be 2 years. If we want to extend it, we need to mutually agree. However, if we at our discretion decide to end it early, it's our decision, the company's discretion. So that's the first point with respect to the return. Later on, it talks about your title will be reevaluated upon your return to the U.S. It does not say we will together discuss it, we will agree upon it. It says it will be reevaluated, implication, by the company. The company will evaluate it. Then, when you get to page 6, where the arbitration provision is, it states, at the end of the secondment, there can be no guarantees you'll return to the same position you occupied prior to the leaving the U.S. So it's pretty clear there's all bets are off with respect to what happens when you come back. The company will discuss with you any suitable alternative employment option was within Norgren prior to your return to the U.S. Well, Mr. Trojan's counsel has admitted the company complied because they conferred with him before he left China. That was one of the very first questions Judge Lichtenstein asked Mr. Trojan's counsel, and he said yes, they conferred before he came back. And he was given a letter, which he signed. Now, interestingly, it says the company will discuss with you. It does not say the company will discuss with you and the company and you must mutually agree on what will happen. It just says we'll discuss with you. So I would submit, again, it's not a promise that you get to sort of negotiate and ultimately agree upon what will happen. But in any event, the company did comply with that obligation, as reflected by the 2007 letter, which Mr. Trojan signed, which is item 7 in the record. And then it goes on to say, in the event you don't return and you remain with an Oregon company, the company will pay the costs associated with the sale of your home and your further relocation, and it goes on. But that's it with respect to the return to the U.S. There is nothing in the 2006 letter that says the company and Mr. Trojan have to mutually agree upon what's going to happen when he returns.
Ms. Kiskin, let me ask you something else, because it seems like what you're talking about right now has a lot to do with the merits of whether he could even have a claim. But getting back to the question of arbitrability and looking at the arbitration clause, what would you give to the meaning of the term in their claim rising under or in connection with the arrangement? Because it doesn't say the exact words of the arrangement, but
yes,
doesn't mean more.
And Your Honor, I think with respect to my commentary about sort of reading the document in its entirety, I think you have to do that ultimately I understand that there may be it may be a fine line as to when you're actually interpreting the agreement versus when you're interpreting and reading the agreement in context to interpret the arbitration clause. And I would submit that that's what I was trying to do for the panel's benefit. But with respect specifically to the clause that says in connection with such arrangement, when you read that in context of the whole document, it means we will arbitrate claims, disputes that arise in connection with the temporary assignment to China, with things that don't go right or don't go as they're supposed to go under the terms of this letter. So, for example, if you feel like we didn't gross up your pay sufficiently to equalize your taxes for purposes of your tax liability in the U.S., that relates to this arrangement. His coming back to the U.S., taking a new job, and then being laid off goes well beyond this arrangement and would not be governed by, and is not governed by, that arbitration clause. Mr. Trojan really focuses on in connection with to argue that that should be construed broadly, but you have to read the totality of that phrase, in connection with the arrangement. It does not state in connection with your employment. If it had a broader reference like that, then maybe it would be a broader arbitration clause. But thank you. I see that I'm out of time. I would ask that you affirm the district court's decision conclusion that there was no agreement to arbitrate because the 2006 letter was superseded by the 2007 letter. And in any event, the 2006 letter, even if still had some viability, would not govern the claims pertaining to Mr. Trojan's termination as the global category manager. Thank you very much, Your Honors.
Counsel, my question to you before you start is, what do you want to arbitrate and what is the remedy? Now, this started out as an age discrimination complaint for the EEOC. He got permission to bring litigation. Do you want to arbitrate the age discrimination issue?
We want to arbitrate the breach of this contract, and substantially, we want to arbitrate the company's breach of the provision in it that says we will discuss with you any suitable alternative employment. Now, I would argue there's no ambiguity in that, that a discussion must occur between two people about what would be suitable employment for him upon his return. The company breached that provision, point blank, by telling him this would be your job. He knew that was going to be a problem with the job they were selecting and trying to create out of whole cloth for him. And he said, I have no choice, I'll have to take it. There was no discussion between them in which he said, you know, here's some openings, there are some openings, what about this, what about that? So that's a very clear breach. But should there be an ambiguity in that provision, that ambiguity should be up to the arbitrator to determine. I appreciate the court today going beyond the arbitrability issue to go to the damages and the remedies and the causes of action, but I think the threshold question, and I think we may be back, I suppose, if the court rules in our favor, depending on what the trial court may do or what comes down the road. But right now, I think that we would argue that this contract very clearly calls for arbitration. And the court today has hit the nail on the head when it homes in on this language that any dispute under or in connection with the arrangement will be settled by arbitration. And indeed, the court has hit the nail on the head again that there's no definition of arrangement. Well, I think that an ordinary person would have to interpret the arrangement as the entire document. It is a very detailed document, discusses all manner of things relating to his work there and upon his return and prior to his return and what will happen to him upon his return and what his future will hold. And that really goes to the very essence of this agreement, because no employee in his position would ever agree to go to China, I would think, without those kinds of assurances that these discussions would occur. I think what counsel might be saying to you is that this company's big and it has the muscle just to tell an employee, that's your job, take it or leave it. That's not a discussion. That's not a good faith discussion. And in contract law or UCC law, that kind of edict would never survive the application of common law or statutory law. So with that, I have nothing further. Thank you.
We thank both counsel for their briefs and arguments. The case will be deemed submitted. A written opinion will issue in due course.